shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. So much to talk about this week. Trump, immigration, Priti Patel, and whether we should have locked down the country much earlier. We'll talk a lot about COVID today, of course. And I'm delighted to say I've got a brilliant guest for you, a man called Harjap Bangal. He's an immigration solicitor in Hounslow in London, and he joins me now.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, Harjap.
Good afternoon, John.
Let's first of all start with these alarming statistics that maybe up to 70-odd percent of the BAME community will not take the vaccine. As a member of that community yourself, what do you make of that?
Well, I find it disturbing and I find it quite alarming to the effect that on Friday, my dad had one. He had the vaccine. And he was, before that, he'd heard so many rumours and we'd heard so many rumours of why we shouldn't get the vaccine. And it's not too dissimilar to what other communities are saying. I think anti-vaxxers as whole, they just have the same sort of rumours, you know, that, oh, they're going to put a chip in you. Bill Gates is going to appear in your dreams and take all your bank account numbers. The government's going to monitor you. You'll be fine for about a week. And then afterwards, you'll lose your sight or you'll lose your ability to talk. All these sort of rumours. And my dad went on Friday to Chiswick and he was just shocked at how there was a lack of ethnic minority elders there. And I said, well, how many people there? He goes, there was about 70 people there and people were coming and going. So there is a problem. Now, for me, the way that sits is, well, hold on. All summer and all year, the BME community, of which I'm part of, has been saying, we need to be better protected. The government needs to do more. You know, we're the ones who are going to die more than the others.
Yeah, because disproportionately more people from that community have died, haven't they?
Yeah, because of our poor diets, our poor lifestyles, our genetics. A lot of our elders have heart disease, have cholesterol problems, blood pressure issues. Type 2 diabetes is rife. I mean, I'm 45. I've had type 2 diabetes since I was 28. And, you know, I had a heart attack at the age of 44. Mm. And with that literally came about after I'd lost a lot of weight. I used to weigh about 120 maybe kilograms. I got down to about 198 kilograms. And I was quite fit because I'm 6'2". I was going to the gym a couple of days. I just felt like a tightness in my chest as if something hasn't been digested. You know, when you eat something and you haven't digested it properly. And, you know, I came back home and I said to Mum, I've got a bit of a tightness in my chest. She goes, I'll have a cup of tea, as all mums do. And then I said, okay. So Thursday morning, I have Thursdays off. So I was going to do the school run. And Mum goes, well, you still got that tightness in your chest? And I said, yeah. She goes, well, why don't you go to the hospital? You can drop the kids off and you'll be back in time. Thursday morning, no one will be there. A&E will be empty. So I did that. I dropped my daughter off, went to West Middlesex Hospital here, drove in myself. I said, look, I've got a little bit of a tightness in the chest. They said it's probably gas. They put me on an ECG and it was God's will. Usually A&E is packed, but this for the first time in my life, there was not a single soul there. So they took me straight in, put an ECG on. They said, that's fine. And I said, okay, they go, it probably is gas, but we've got to do your bloods anyway, because you've said, you know, you've got a tightness in your chest. When my bloods came back in about 40 minutes, there was like commotion everywhere.
Yeah.
And I saw two doctors talking. I heard two doctors talking between themselves and they mentioned something called troponin. Now, I'm a non-medical guy, so I Googled it like every other guy would on the phone. And then I said, well, troponin is an enzyme that's released when you had a heart attack. So I said to the doctor, I said, what's going on? And he goes, there's a problem with your heart. And me being naive, I said, well, you better fix it. I've got to pick my daughter up at 3:30. and I go, no, mate, you need to sit down. You're not going anywhere. You know, you need to call your loved ones in. We're taking you into surgery now. So for me, my whole world sort of changed there. And I'd been to the gym the day before and done a sauna and a steam and a 5K run.
So you're trying to live in a healthier way now. So when you look at the rest of the BAME community, I mean, what are these stories that have been spread? I've heard some of it is that directed at the Muslim community, it's not halal, et cetera, et cetera. And whereas I've seen imams and I've seen leaders of other ethnic or religious groups come on and say, no, it's perfectly okay. And also, there's a huge problem within the black community, isn't there? How do we stop this? How do we clamp down on this fake news?
Yeah, I mean, it's in every community. I mean, the Hindus are not really touching it because it might contain beef, they're saying.
That's right,
yeah. Or meat. And the same for Sikhs. And yet I just find a series of quite double standards everywhere. I just find that the way is the ethnic community people themselves, the doctors have to come out, the influencers have to come out and dispel these fears.
What would your message be then? What would your message be, Harjit?
Oh, well, I'd uploaded my message, John. So as soon as my dad got his jab, I made a video. I made a minute video and an 8 minute video and I put it out on all my socials. Luckily, I've got a massive following. So I've got a massive following and I do a lot of TV shows and radio appearances.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so I've done that. And since that, a lot of people, a lot of elders, people have shown it to the elders and said, well, you know, Harjap's dad got it and he's all right. And he is all right. So, you know, okay. Nothing's happened. He ate twice as much when he came back and he went to sleep.
Okay, let's widen that discussion out then to the vaccine as a whole. What do you make of people in the whole community? And I've just banned everybody. Anybody who puts up the smiley face on Twitter and anybody who says it's a hoax, I'm just blocking them straight away because I've had it to the back teeth now. I know people who have died of it. I know people who have been extremely ill with it. It isn't just the flu, is it?
No. But, you know, I've had neighbours who have died. I've had clients who have died and people say, oh, well, they must have had underlying conditions. True, some of them did. But if they hadn't have got this, they wouldn't have died. And if they'd got the flu, they wouldn't have died with the flu. They've had the flu before.
Absolutely.
There's people with underlying conditions have the flu. You know, I've had the flu so many times, but if I got COVID, I'll be dead.
What I also find disgusting is when they say, oh, well, it's only people over 70 or over 80. And I retort, well, what, you want state euthanasia? I think everybody's got a right to life and to live for as long as they possibly can, haven't they?
Yeah, I think that is a very selfish take. I read on Twitter a lot of people's tweets. Oh, well, these people just stay indoors then and let everyone else get on with their lives. And, you know, I think that's a very selfish take. What does that mean then? That if you're ill through no fault of your own, and is your life expendable more than someone who's, say, 30, 35?
Good point.
So are we more expendable? I mean, we've kids, we've got parents, just the same as everyone else has. And I think we also should have the freedom to roam around the streets without being infected by others. So if you really, you know, want to be purer than pure and take the moral high ground, then it's best to make sure that you don't have COVID and you don't spread it to others. I mean, it's almost as if they're saying, that's all right, I can take the burden of killing off 10 old elders as long as I live and as long as I'm allowed to go down the pub and have my pint and party down the club and all of that and do my shopping. But that's a heavy burden to bear.
It certainly is.
If you end up killing your parents as a result of it, then are your shoulders broad enough to bear that burden? Trust me, they're not. I know people who brought COVID home and their parents caught it and died. And they sit there every day either drinking themselves to death or either thinking themselves to death as to what if, what if, what if. Well, that's too late. So because it's not your parent that dies, doesn't mean you go and kill everyone else's parents.
Okay. Just before we go on to masks and the lockdown and the way it's been dealt with, just wanted to ask you one more question about the BAME community. I was reading an article today and some of the elders, as you described them, were saying, well, when we watch the telly, it's all white, posh, public school educated people telling us what we should be doing. Whereas there are hundreds, thousands of BAME doctors, cardiac surgeons, etc., etc. Do you think there needs to be more representation on the TV to actually help that? There was an Asian doctor who was always on Sky, but do you think we need a bit more of that to help the BAME community so that when they do go in, they see a doctor that looks like them? Or is that liberal tosh?
I think people feel more comfortable of their own, with their sort of own sort. So women feel more comfortable with women, blokes and elderly people feel more comfortable with elders. It's not a matter of a race thing or a colour thing. I think it's just about getting the message out into the BAME community through the BAME radio stations, through the BAME TV channels, through the adverts. And it's a matter of getting the point across and dispelling these fears. It's about going out and finding out what these rumours are, what these fears are. And the governments don't really have, you know, they haven't really got the reach out to do that. They've got the right people in the roles. Why can't they get Priti Patel on TV? Why can't they get Rishi on TV? I mean, they're the two biggest, most influential BAME figures in the country.
Well, it's the most multiracial, at the moment, cabinet we've ever had. So you're right. Why don't we put forward those people? Okay, let's talk about that, the whole thing. Do you think they've handled it very well? You just mentioned Priti Patel. There's been a leaked phone call, which she's not arguing with, where she's talking to Conservative activists and she says, we got it wrong. We should have locked down in March. What's your view on that?
Right. In March and the end of February, I was actually in India. And I was in India and then this whole COVID thing kicked off and we heard that India was going to lock down. So I caught a flight back around about the 6th or 7th. Now, when I was at Delhi Airport, You should have seen it. They had military there, masks there, gloves there, sanitizers there, the whole kibosh. And this was last March. So they basically have what everything is normal to us now.
Yep.
They had that already. This is India, mate. This is India, right? A country which we sit back here and think, you know what? It's backwards and it's diverse and, you know, it's poor country. You know, a lot of us do think that. I got on a plane and got off at Heathrow. At Heathrow, it was all open arms. Baggage handlers as normal and no mask for the immigration staff, no mask for anybody. It was all there. And that's the point when it kicked in for me, we are going to have a huge problem. That why haven't we closed down? And there were flights that landed alongside mine full from people from Italy, from where we now know that people brought it over from Spain.
New York.
From New York.
Even Wuhan itself, my friend. Flights were still coming in. So that was a mistake. You're saying we should have locked down. And would you have liked us to have gone to a real draconian lockdown? Did you agree with the first lockdown, for example?
I thought the first lockdown was quite effective. And I thought it was good. But the only thing they messed it up was there's no point putting us through all of that if you're going to leave all the airports open for people to come and go freely as they want.
Well said.
I live under a flight path. I live in Heston, right next to the airport. I was locked down in my back garden, not going out for a walk, walking up and down in the back garden with my family. And every 2 minutes, a plane was coming. And it wasn't just a cargo plane. There were planes full of people. And people were getting off and they were told, go on, off you. These people jumped on a tube, jumped on a bus, got in a cab, and off they went out there and into the public. And they stayed for a week, 2 weeks. There was no point in putting us through these lockdown measures where the British public has made a sacrifice. If you're going to allow planefuls of people to come and go and without COVID tests,
okay,
we should have done what Australia and New Zealand did. We should have done what other countries did in saying, look, no one's coming in and no one's going out. We're going to test every single one of you at the airport, and you've got to have a negative test before you even get on a plane. And till this date, we still haven't got the correct procedures in.
No, we haven't.
So in other countries, the government's hired hotels out, special hotels, where you had to quarantine. And if you left them hotels, you're in trouble. But we just had so many people flaunting the rules. And we saw that recently with this Switzerland stuff, didn't we?
Where the skiers, 400 skiers who went missing.
Yeah, and everyone just legged it in the middle of the night.
Well, it seems to me that there's one rule for footballers and people who are on Love Island and Z-list celebrities, and some radio presenters, it's got to be said, and TV hosts, and a different rule for the rest of us, Harjo.
Yeah. I mean, because we're the easy target, and it's because we haven't got that much money to hire our charter planes. We haven't got, to go private or first class. We can't afford that. We've got to risk our life travelling on economy if we go. I went on economy, and I came back on an economy. And since then, I've had a lot of opportunity to travel abroad because my job requires me to travel abroad. But I haven't, because I don't want to sit next to someone and catch COVID on an 8-hour flight. I just don't want to die. And I haven't let my parents travel. I haven't let anyone travel. And it's such a shame that this government is saying certain people can come in and out and free and bring COVID over. But us lot have got to stay locked down.
Okay, let's leave it there. We'll come back in a moment with the second half of the show. I think we should also talk about everybody from people like Dominic Cummings, even Boris, who have flouted the rules. We'll talk about whether airlines should ban people from travelling unless they've got a so-called COVID bio passport. Much more to come on Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt, in the second half of the show. Don't you dare go away. My special guest today, immigration solicitor Arjap Bangal. And we will talk about illegal immigration as well as the show progresses. Don't go away.
Shooting From The Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt. Shooting From The Lip.
Hi, welcome back to the second part of Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International, with my special guest today, immigration solicitor Harjap Bangal. Harjap, you were just in a minute ago talking about airlines. Massively in the news at the moment because Charlie Mullins, who owns Plimlico Plumbers, has said he won't employ any new people if they haven't had the COVID vaccination. Some people are going crazy saying that's against human rights laws, it'll never be allowed, but now I see Qantas are saying the same thing. Every country in the world seems to be saying if you haven't got the inoculation, you're not coming in. And indeed, the EU have said we need bio passports. Where do you stand on this, both personally and in terms of you being somebody who's involved in the law?
I think legally you have to watch out that you're giving everyone an equal opportunity. But ultimately, if you're running a private company and a private enterprise, it's up to you who you employ and who you're not. It's up to you what terms and conditions you have. I think if the rest of your staff has abided by the lockdown and has got vaccinated and have got negative tests, that you're only right to want to protect them in relation to, well, if you can get a vaccine, an effective vaccine, and then you can come to work. Remember, a vaccine is not 100% protection.
No, of course
but
not.
But you'll be a lot more protected today if you have the vaccine than you were before yesterday when you didn't have it. That's a fact. We know that. So it's not just water they inject you with. It is, in fact, something that's effective. And it has been approved by various countries, you know, various organizations and health authorities. So I think it's a fair request. I wouldn't want someone bringing COVID into my office. We've got the shields up. We've got the distancing measures in place. You know, I make sure that my people have the COVID tests. And if someone's got, been in contact with someone with COVID, they have to go stay at home and self-isolate. So if I'm putting all of that through, then if I want to hire someone new, I want to make sure that they're all right. And, you know, they haven't got any disease, especially in this sort of time. Now, people will argue legally, well, that tomorrow you could say, well, you want someone to have an AIDS test. You want someone to have a HIV test. You want someone to have a malaria test. And, you know, where are we going to stop? But I think this is just not a normal thing. This is a pandemic. It's called a pandemic for a reason. It's been classified as a pandemic for a reason. So you have to be careful. And as an employer, tomorrow, if you haven't taken them measures, and you've allowed COVID to go into your office or into your workplace, and you've been negligent, then you are facing potential claims. You've got to show you did as much as you could in order to keep your staff and yourself and your clients and your customers safe.
So it's extraordinary times need extraordinary measures in shorthand. And certainly, if I wanted a plumber to come in, I'd be much happier going with Charlie Mullins if I know he's checking that everyone's had the vaccination and been tested. That's just common sense, isn't it? I wouldn't want to get on a plane like you just... I went to Delhi last year as well. I wouldn't want to be on a plane to Delhi worrying whether the people who behind me have got COVID. No one would. It's just logical, isn't it? So biopassports will happen by default. What do you think?
I think that if biopassports don't happen, then every hotel, every establishment is then going to start asking for it and will be in a position where effectively we'll have that system in place. So a lot of people saying, well, hold on, how about my holiday? If I don't want a vaccine, I can't holiday abroad in Europe and all that. My answer to them would be tough, because that's exact them. Those people are the exact people that are telling elders to stay indoors. Tough.
Let me just bring in on that point, Germany. Angela Merkel is discussing seriously that anybody who breaks, because they've got a curfew at the moment, anybody breaks the curfew persistently, goes against the COVID rules, she's going to lock them up and, you know, what some people are describing as internment camps. And of course, now on the internet, people then start talking about, oh, you're being like a Nazi again. And even our discussion, some people might be painting us in that way. What would you say to that?
I've just had one of our clients, and he's been a naughty boy during COVID. So he got caught drink driving and no insurance.
Yeah.
So I'm not giving away anyone's identity or anything, but this is what he done, and this is an example, and they've locked him up for 10 weeks. That's in this country. And the judge said, this is COVID times. You need to be responsible. You can't be go around doing this. And I'm quite surprised that people think that they can go around just being normal in these times, that they think they can go around committing crimes, that they can think of go around thinking of breaking a law. If this law's in place, it's for a reason, for the safety of the general public, then you've got to adhere by it. And by breaking those laws, you're insulting all of them people who are stuck indoors and abiding by it. So, I mean, if one idiot, let's say, is going to go out and break the rules and infect 100 people, you know, how are the 100 people going to feel who are staying indoors? And then this guy, nothing sure. happens to him. He just gets away scot-free and he's smiling away, like you say, with the smiley faces and the tweets on Twitter and all of that. And of course, yeah, I'm going to be peed off. I'm going to want to see that guy be sent down as well.
The crazy thing about it, of course, is that poll after poll, proper polls, show that over 80% of the public believe in the measures. In fact, a lot of them, quite a big percentage as well, the majority, want the measures to be even tougher. So where do you stand on masks, for example? Do you believe masks are right? And are you doing the social distancing and washing your hands? Is it right to insist? And in fact, do we need to go further? Should you have to wear a mask every time you're outside your front door?
I believe in masks. So I've believed in masks from day one. I've seen people turned away from shops, you know, even takeaway stores, because they're not wearing a mask. And I think that you're well within your rights. We have put a sign on our office saying, if you've got a mask, you can come in. If not, you can't come in. You know the rules before you come in. It's up to you. If you want to make a choice, you want to avail a service, then you abide by the rules. It's quite simple. If there's evidence to show that masks are effective, and there is, then why wouldn't you want to wear one? Okay, we're not in a fashion parade. It's not a beauty contest out there that people want to see your face. People are dying.
It's about being a society, isn't it? It's about doing your bit to help. It's a bit like during the Blitz. You don't leave the curtains open and the light on to help the Nazi bombers come in. You do your bit. You get in the shelter. You know, you have a blackout, etc., etc. So going on from here then, what about this lockdown we're in at the moment? It looks like it's going to go well past Easter now. Are you comfortable with that? Or I suppose comfortable is the wrong word. Do you think it's still the right tactic?
I think the right tactic is to stay locked down until we get this vaccine out. And I think we've got to go 24/7 on it so that even people like me and you can walk in at 2 o'clock when in the morning and it's not busy and get our jab done and get our vaccine done. You've got to go 24/7 on it and make sure that you cover the most vulnerable of society. Once that's done and once people have got their second dose, instead of this second dose being phased out to 12 weeks, that's not good enough.
No, I agree.
That has got to come down to 3 weeks to be effective. And there's been study in the news today from Israel to say the longer you leave that dose, the more less effective the first dose will be. And it'll be, by the time you get the second dose, it'll be like, you might as well not have had it.
Yeah, and of course, Harja, we've got to say, Israel have done brilliantly on this. And I think also we've got to be fair to Boris Johnson and Hancock. They've done brilliantly in terms of getting 4 million out already. But I guess, you know, that doesn't absolve other responsibilities. Overall, do you think Boris and Hancock have done a good job?
No, not at all. I don't think they've done a good job. I think anyone out there will be struggling to defend them. We will never forgive them for the fact they didn't lock down soon enough. They allowed festivals to happen, football matches to happen, shops to reopen, eat out to help out.
Well, that was a complete disaster, wasn't it? Eat out to help out.
Eat out to help out from the golden boy, who everyone's golden boy, you know, including our communities, Rishi. You know, dishy rishy, as they say. Mate, that I work in Southall and Hounslow. There were queues outside restaurants 100 deep where people were standing there without masks, you know, 20%, 30% have got masks on, just acting as if they'd never seen some tandoori chicken before.
Well, hang on, but that's a very interesting point you're putting up, because a lot of your clients will be in the restaurant business, I guess, in Southall, etc. What about the economic impact? Because people are saying the balance is wrong, that the economy is being trashed. What do you say about that?
Yeah, businesses are having a tough time. There's no doubt about it. People are having a tough time. If it wasn't for these delivery people and these agencies, in fact, they're the only ones making money at the moment. Yep. The delivery guys, the online shopping guys. You know, we've got the biggest stores that we've had since age, such as Debenhams, you know, clothing.
Isn't that a reason why he now needs to lift it? I don't agree with this, but should he not lift the lockdown in some way? The economy, there'll be nothing left if he carries on with this. Or do you take the view, well, we've just got to carry on till we get it?
Well, we've seen what happens when that happens. We've seen it with America. So that, you know, they weren't locked down and everything was fine and they got the highest death rate. You know, so there you go. It's a choice you make out of keeping the economy open or keeping people like me and you alive.
Okay. Interesting that you mention America. Trump, of course, has gone this week. Biden's in. What do you think, as somebody who works in immigration, in a sense, you know, you work in that area, what did you make of Trump and his wall and his attitude to it? And will it be any different in the States going forward?
I thought that was all propaganda. I thought, as we've seen here, it's very hard to keep people out who want to come here, whether they come by dinghy, whether they come by lorry. It's such a huge network and involves everyone. So, it's, you know, if people say, oh, it's just immigrants profiteering. It isn't.
No, it's not. Somebody's supplying the boats, aren't they? Yeah.
It's run by people who are, you know, who are British and who are American. And just like we think that we've got a problem here with people coming over in dinghies, the American public has, you know, the same problem with people coming from South America.
Yeah.
And it's not something you can cut off or sell a dream. You can sell a dream that we're going to control our borders. But the fact is, let's take a look at the UK. We know where these dinghies come from, because they only come from two or three places,
yes,
France or Belgium, right?
Yeah.
They come from the same shore and the same beach. And let me tell you, John, I've been doing this 20 years. They come from the same place. The story's the same. We come across here, we got a lorry here, we got from Calais, and they always end up in the same place, Dover, Tilbury, Liverpool, you know, by the ports.
So why aren't we going back to the source and stopping it there? Or are you saying it's impossible? I mean, you know what's going on at the moment. 7,000, 8,000 people already in the last 12 months have arrived on our beaches. It's not good for them, the individual illegal, if you want to describe them in that way. And it's not good for the fabric of our society, is it? No one's got a problem with well-managed, controlled immigration. But can we control it? Can we do anything?
Well, I think what it is, the government just doesn't have a system, it just doesn't have the expertise to deal with it. We all know every year there's a select committee report about the Home Office. The MPs hear it. And every year it says the Home Office is not fit for its purpose. So what happens? We have a system that's broken and it needs to be knocked down and rebuilt.
Okay, well, you're an expert. You're working it very quickly. Tell me how you would do it.
Well, we've first got to look at the people who are already here, John. There's 1.5 million people here who are still illegal. We've got to look at them. You can't send them back. There's no way we can send them back.
So do we give them an amnesty like Boris suggested when he was London mayor?
No, well, Boris's amnesty is like, okay, we'll give them all indefinite leave to remain. That incentivizes others to come over thinking, all right, I'll just live illegally in England and at some time I'll get indefinite leave to remain. What we've got to say is, all right, we'll bring you into our system, but we're going to work as a pay-as-you-play. If you earn, every year you'll have to renew your visa, for which you'll have to pay us X amount of fees. The condition of that is you've got to earn X amount of money a year and pay us X amount in tax. And you're not allowed to call your families over. You will never get indefinite, or you might get it after about 20 years. You might get a British passport. But if you've got a job and you're paying your way and you're paying tax and you're paying us a visa fee every year and you're paying your NHS costs, which migrants do at the moment, of which they argue, well, which an argument is actually that's a double tax because they already pay it for it out of their income tax.
Sure.
Right, so there shouldn't be a fee. If you pay for it out of your income tax, there shouldn't be an NHS fee. But what you'll do is you'll have 1.5 million people opting in. You'll know who they are. They'll be fingerprinted. They'll be on your register. They'll be paying money in tax. This country will be back on its feet. Instead, we're paying the Home Office, who are useless, to catch these people in the morning, and they can't catch them, and then hold them in detention centres.
Or in four-star hotels.
And we can't send them back. We can't send them back. So what's the point of having a hope of grabbing them in the first place if you know you can't send them back? It costs 12 grand to deport someone. So work out 1.5 million. I can't even work that out. I don't even know how many zeros that's got in it, mate.
Hard jab. I'm going to have to stop there, but that is fascinating. It's a subject I'd love to return to with you at some time. But can I thank you for being my guest today? That's Harjap Bangal. He's an immigration solicitor. Great opinions. Controversial opinions. Maybe an opinion or two that you didn't expect from an immigration solicitor. I loved it. I'll be back with another guest, hopefully shooting from the lip next week here on Sputnik International. Until then, thank you for listening. You have been listening to John Gaunt on Sputnik International with my special guest, Harjap Bangal. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Shooting from the lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.